You're listening to episode 356 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast. I'm your host, Dr. April Seifert. On this podcast, we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm so thrilled to have you with me today. Today, we are going to jump right in. We are talking about kind of a sneaky topic. Have you ever caught yourself saying, "Oh my gosh, I swore up and down that I would not act like my parent when, you know, I became a parent, and here I am, I'm doing the exact same thing"? Or have you ever noticed that in your family, there are ways of doing things or implicit rules that everyone seems to follow? Like, no, we don't directly deal with conflict in this family, or that is not how we handle these types of discussions. And even more severe than that, sometimes we find that there are certain belief systems or trauma or triggers that seem to flow down generationally in families. It's so sneaky. And that's what we're talking about today. Because the thing is, in the field of psych, we're increasingly learning more and more about how things like trauma, our habits, and our belief systems are handed down from generation to generation. And a lot of times, I would venture to guess most of the time, it's without us even knowing. I mean, you very likely today have a belief system or sort of a way of seeing and responding to the world that was transmitted to you through generations in your family. And not only, I mean, one of the things we talk about a ton on this podcast is the impact that something like this, or any of the topics that we cover here, the impact that they have on how we individually experience life and how effective we can be. But this topic is even broader than that because it has incredible implications for the way that we understand systemic challenges in society or inequality and inequity in our society. So if you've ever found yourself in a situation where you don't feel like you can understand your own behavior, or if you've ever been sort of the pivot person in your family where you're fighting against continuing dysfunction in your family, you're like the person who the buck stops with, or if you've ever felt the pain of just trauma in your family and you just don't know how to move past it, this episode is absolutely for you. Today, we are speaking with an incredible expert. She is just one of the most wonderful people that I have connected with from literally the moment that we met. Her name is Dr. Lynetta Willis. She's a psychologist and a family empowerment coach. She helps frustrated families stop what she calls stable misery cycles or unhelpful patterns that keep them stuck so they can create more joy in their parenting or partnerships. She's got a program called Triggered to Transform. It's a parent coaching program, and she helps parents all over the world confidently deal with their triggers so they can pass on the best parts of themselves and enjoy parenting more. Lynetta's got experience and training in her graduate program in neuroscience. I mean, she is one of those rare experts, like true experts in her field, who can just break it down in a way that helps you understand it and apply it. You are going to love this episode. You are going to adore Dr. Willis. She is absolutely fantastic, and I can't wait for you to meet her. So I'm going to start talking or stop talking, and let's roll that interview. Lynetta, I'm so excited that you're here with me today. The fact that you are on this podcast episode is a testament to the tenacity that both of us have had, because this is try number three and it's happening today. So thank you so much for being here.
Yes, I'm so excited. But you know, the beautiful thing, I got times to hang out with you in these short clips of time, you know, because random stuff kept happening to us. So it's given me more time to hang with you. So I'm not complaining.
It's amazing. I mean, it truly was. I was so excited to have you on the show. And then these like hiccups kept happening and all this crazy stuff kept going down. And I'm like, This is just such a microcosm of what life is, right? It just gets really unexpected curveballs sometimes. And we just have to decide what's important and just trudge forward. And that's what we're doing.
You know, and I think it's a perfectly good, I think what happened to us the very first time is a really good example, speaking of psychological strength, of leaning into what you need. Because if you remember that first time, we just ended up like something really big happened in the news. And we were like, can we talk for a minute about that to just acknowledge? And then it was like an hour later.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because you've seen those memes out there, right? Like between the political stuff, the health stuff, the pandemic, the, all the things, and burnout is rampant right now. Between all those things, there's like these funny memes. They're not really funny, haha, because it's just terrible, but that we're all just sort of in this crazy fire. And yet we're like over here formatting PowerPoints and pretending like things are normal. And you're totally right, because we hopped on and it was like, no, we're not going to do that. This is crazy. And we need to talk about this. So an hour later and whoopsies, we didn't record, but
That would have been awesome. We are doing it today. Woo!
Yay. Well, I'm so thrilled to talk with you because you are one of those people just from the background and the work that you do who fits in so well to our goal here of taking really great research-backed, hard psychological science, but then talking about it in a way that makes it easier for people to understand. And in your work, you do some work on something that you call intergenerational drama. Can you talk a little bit about what that is to sort of set the context for the audience today?
Absolutely. So, you know, a lot of times we hear the phrase intergenerational trauma, right? And those are those things that have happened long ago, deep in our ancestral past often. Like, for instance, an intergenerational, I'm a Black woman, for those listening who can't see. So an intergenerational trauma in my family lineage would be slavery, right? I personally have, thankfully, never been enslaved. You know, so I don't necessarily have that immediate reaction, you know, to that or those immediate memories. Now, we can talk about epigenetics and all that stuff, but in terms of my day to day, that's not a trauma that I directly experienced. So what I often find happens when we get into these conversations about intergenerational traumas, especially in the academic field, it becomes very heady because it's hard to really attach, you know, like if you talk about Holocaust survivors, you know, people, and then the generations since then, they're like, I can't exactly, like I was not in the hall. I was not alive during the Holocaust, but it clearly has an impact.
Yeah.
Because it has an impact on, you know, our great, 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 great grandparents, our great, great, great grandparents, our great, great grandparents, our great, right. And so how they respond and react and the beliefs that they carry and the actions that they perform or don't perform, all of that is what's passed down and it impacts how we show up today. So for me, the intergenerational trauma, that phrase just didn't quite fit. So I started calling it intergenerational dramas.
That's so good.
Right? Right? And what it represents for me is literally, not like save the drama for your mama, but like literally like drama in the sense of what you'd see on a stage. Because what ends up happening is we act out the behaviors and the actions that were passed down to us. So no, I wasn't alive during slavery, but there was something that was passed down in my family lineage that likely has an origin from there. And that's whippings and beatings, right? You know, like this idea that to keep, like back then it was to keep slaves in line, to keep them safe, all of these things, you had to whip them and you had to beat them. Right. And so this idea has been, or this practice is something that has been passed down many, many generations. It stops with me. I've never whipped or beat my children, but it's something that I definitely experienced. Right. So it was a drama that was passed down and inherited from generation to generation to generation all the way down. And so the clients that I often work with, we will explore their history and the different things that they've learned and experienced and realize, wait a minute, this is connected to something else. I had one client who she was very what she called emotionally stunted. She's like, I want to cry, but I can't cry. Why can't I cry? What's wrong with me? It feels like it's like I'm like emotionally constipated. That's what she called it, emotionally constipated. And when we did some exploring, what she realized was she comes from a long line of farmers. And in her ancestral lineage, there was no room for emotions. Yeah. You got to get out there, farm the land, or you won't eat.
Yeah. Right.
So the drama that was played out in her family over and over and over again was emotions don't matter. Emotions are not important. Emotions can be liability. You get too emotional, you might find yourself laying in a bed under your cover, and then winter comes and you're starving to death under that cover. Yeah. Right. So this story was passed down from generation to generation that landed in her lap around emotional expression. Could not just not as it's not only not helpful, but it could be deadly.
Yes. And that's so interesting because I'm hearing two, like if you sort of back the tape up, right, to the point when this whatever practice, situation, like habit, however it manifests in people's lives, probably a lot of different ways, when it began in someone's family history or even just societal history, you could see where either it happened to you out of your control. You gave the example of being whipped and beaten in slavery, mm-hmm. or it was actually adaptive to some degree at that time. But then as time goes on, things change. And it's so sneaky, right? Like it's sneaky that it's not like, bang, everything changes around you and all of a sudden it's completely not adaptive and not useful anymore. It's a slow change mm-hmm. usually. And do you find that people like look around and not even realize like, how did I get here? And how are we still doing this? Even though it isn't working for us,
yes.
We don't even see it.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's interesting because I work with a lot of parents and couples in my work. And it's so interesting how I'll come across a parent who is like, I swore I would never parent the way that I was parented. Mm. And when I get stressed or I get triggered, I'm doing those things. I'm saying the things, I'm doing the things, and what is wrong with me? And then that starts this death spiral of shame and guilt, right?
Which always helps, right? Let's just pile that on top of anything. It makes it better.
It makes it all better. So, you know, what we end up talking about is, you know, especially when it comes to the most sacred relationships in our lives, whether it be with our parent as parents or with our partners, we often think that those journeys begin for us when we push out the baby or when we're standing at the altar, if that's our choice, and we say, I do, right? But really, your relationship journey began when you were in the womb,
wow.
right? Your memory, what you learned around how to relate to other people literally began before you were born. Like how your mother responded and reacted to you being in the womb and to other people around her, all the hormones and things like that that went through you were an impact of that. So when you came out and you start watching and listening, right? Parenting school does not start when you download that online course, okay? It starts when you first start, when you were parented, right? That's when you learned that. So this idea that we can somehow shift and transform on a dime is almost laughable when you think about it that way.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, if you're 40 years old, You've been learning, you've been in school for 40 years, which sounds like a nightmare, but I mean, anyways, yeah. You have. You've been on this journey for a long time. So it is going to take a little bit more than a book or a course to help you shift those neural networks, because that's what we're talking about. Now we're getting into the brain, right? And you're talking about shifting neural networks. You're talking about shifting stories. You're talking about rewiring your nervous system, which I know that sounds like, oh dear God, let me turn this off right now because I'm already overwhelmed. But it's not impossible. I did it, right? I work with people who I help do it. It is absolutely 100% possible. It's just, you have to be intentional about it.
Yeah, that's so good. It's interesting because this is one of those opportunities to take something that feels very conceptual and make it real in our lives, where So my background is in social cognitive psychology, and the cognitive side of this is so applicable here because cognition, the way that we think about how quote unquote information is stored, that sounds very like bland and not like, why do I care about that? But
hippocampus and all that.
Yeah, exactly. Like who cares? But what we're talking about is literally every input that we have is information. And our mind is trying to make sense of it and figure out what it means to us. Is it important or not? Is it good or bad? Do I care about it? Is it related to other things that I know? And when we encode information, it tells us, it gives us clues about who am I? What is my place in the world? What is my role to play? Who are other important people in my life? And what gets really interesting is the habits that we develop as a result of that. How do people like us behave? Mm-hmm. And that's such a broad thing because it could be, to use your slavery example, like how do Black Americans behave? Women, we've encoded all of this information about how do we behave. It could be people from your geographic location. What do we do and what don't we do? And that set of rules is such a powerful force on our worldview, the way that we think, the standards we hold ourselves and others to, how we behave, like the way that we blah, blah, encode information, which sounds so bland, is actually
everything.
The lens that mm-hmm. you approach life through. And that's really what you're getting at here is one of those powerful, you know, influencers of that lens. You know, you just hand down part of that lens through your own behavior without even realizing it.
So true. 100. And it's partially because it happens in like micro milliseconds. All yes. that whole encoding process that you just took 3 minutes to go through literally happens in like 0.003 seconds. Yes. You know, yeah. It's so quick. So we don't even recognize. And also by the time our worldview starts to really become codified and solidified in our brains, it's like, we're so young that it's not even something we'd have an awareness of, which is why I tell people all the time, you know, when they come to me and they feel like, you know, this partnership isn't working, or why is this parenting relationship not working? And I say, you know, you nor your child nor your parent or your partner are broken, but you likely have habits that need to be.
Yeah. Oh, you know? That's so good. Because, yeah. Right, your point about shame and guilt, there's a parent who's listening to this right now that is like, oh my God, I'm so horrible and I'm doing this to my kid. Yes. That's not the point. Like, it isn't the point. You're never mm-hmm. going to get it 100% perfect. But your point of you are not broken, God, that's a message that we mm-hmm. all need to hear. Because yes. if we can lift the guilt and lift the shame and lift the defensiveness, it's so much easier to work on things when you don't feel that knee-jerk reaction of all of that like negative icing on the cake.
Exactly. And it feels less impossible. Mm-hmm. Like I have a program for parents called Triggered to Transformed. And I'm very clear that it is not a course. It is a parent coaching program because mm-hmm. we're together for a year. And, you know, that really gives time for life to happen, but also for that rewiring and retraining process to happen. Mm-hmm. Right? It can't get over 6-12 weeks, right? Like it's something where you actually need accountability and guidance around that process. And same with my couples that I work with. You know, worked with a couple just the other day who it was a heterosexual couple. So the wife was getting really, really, you know, hard on the husband, and to the point of the husband, like, I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. You know, like I change and then there's something else. It's like whack-a-mole, right? Like there's another problem. There's another reason why I'm not good enough. And we dug a little bit and did some processes and some work with her and realized that everything that she was saying and doing to him is exactly how it was in her family growing up. Oh. The hard standards, the, okay, yeah, you made an A, why not an A plus, right? Like that. And it was like literally shifting and transitioning. And that is how she, that's how it was coded in her system to deal with anxiety, to deal with feeling as if things were not, what's the word I'm looking for? Where you're confusing situations where you're just like, I'm not sure how I am or who I am in this relationship or what. The idea is you criticize, you make it more perfect, you make it better, you make it more efficient. And if I do that, then things will be better. I'll have more of a handle and control. And that opened up a huge window for them to realize like there's a lot of past stuff that she is literally in therapy for. Right. Yeah. That is combing into her relationship. And it allows for, to your point, allows for self-compassion as opposed to that shame. Because realizing like this is a brain thing. This is a habit thing. This isn't about you being broken. It's not about you being a bad person. And neither is it for him. Right. You know, so really getting down into that sense of why do I keep doing these habits? Where is this coming from? You know, what was encoded within me that's leading to this? This shift.
And think about the gift that you just gave both of them, right? Because for her, she can think about what it felt like to be in that context and to have someone do that to her and have that in mind as almost a motivator or just extra information as she's thinking about how to relate to him and sort of change that habit in the future. Yeah. But for him, the ability, when you're on the receiving end of something like that, it can be tough to be compassionate to that person. Yeah. But if you can think about, if that husband can think about that wife as a little girl who had that done to her, right? Like it came from somewhere and she experienced it too. You can almost ease up a little bit with, okay, it's going to be okay if she screws up and does it again in the future. And she's trying and we're all working on it here. And the compassion that you get with that is such a gift because it makes it a lot easier to make the change you need to make.
100%. And that's why I love doing work with couples where you get to, where they get to witness that. Cause that's not a conversation or an experience that it's easy to create yourself with your partner because it does require a bit of vulnerability and self-reflection and backing up from the habit to be able to see it. And it's hard to do that on your own.
It is.
Especially if you're like in a defensive space. So couples work really gives the opportunity for that insight to be able to see like and actually witness a process like that. And it wasn't a long process, you know, it wasn't like 2 hours, you know, it's very quick. We can access our pain pretty fast, right? Yeah. Like it's not hard. We're wired that way. Yeah. And when you were speaking about our thoughts. So I actually created, and it's infused in all the work that I do, this framework called the PATHS framework. And it has 5 aspects to it. And these are things that in working, doing this work for over 20 years now, I realized these 5 areas truly need to be addressed and integrated and taken into consideration when we talk about shifting habits, shifting how we show up in the world. And the first one is it's an acronym, PATHS, P-A-T-H-S. First one is perspective, right? And it's the stories in our head, right? So when we talk about, well, okay, sure, there are dramas that are handed down to me. I can get with that, but what if I don't know what they are, you know? Or what if I can't, right? So that's when the explorer or the detective work starts to come in. And the first thing we look at is the perspective, like what are the stories I'm telling myself, right? Especially when I notice that I'm repeating behaviors that were done to me, right? So you get really curious about what are the stories I'm telling myself, about this other person, and about the world in general, like, you know, and what this means. And that story can really start to create a structure for you around what was handed to you. Because, you know, we talk about core beliefs, right? So if I have this story that every single time my kid does this thing, every time my kid yells at me or slams the door, and then I get really flustered or frustrated, or I just start yelling, right? I just immediately get angry and start screaming. Like, what is the story I'm telling about myself? You know, maybe like, I am out of control. I'm powerless. I'm useless. I can't get it together. What's the story? What's the story I'm telling about my child? Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh my gosh, my child's broken. My child can't get it together. This is never going to, you know, what are it, you know, that type of thing. And what's the story you're saying about the relationship between you two or about the world? Like, this is useless. This always going to be this way. I'm never going to, you know, this can't change. Right. And like, literally you can take a piece of paper out and write down those things and then look and ask yourself questions like, where have these stories come up before? You know, mm-hmm. where have I seen these before? Where have I heard these before? Are these familiar to me? Might these stories have been held by my caregivers at all? Right. And this isn't about getting anything perfect. It's just about asking the questions and getting curious
yeah.
around like what may be coming up here, right? Getting that distance.
And it's interesting to take that perspective. Another interesting tool that I've noticed in my life, like one of the things handed down in my family was the speed with which we do things, a very big sense of urgency, efficiency, like it has to get done now and quickly. Mm. And it's funny because I married my husband and for the longest time, I'm like, oh my God, would you go? Like it just, he felt so slow in a lot of areas. And the things that drive us crazy sometimes about other people, because if you look at him, I'm like, no, he actually got done what needed to get done. He just wasn't like out of breath doing it.
It's funny. He's like because, normal speed.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
I'm double speed.
And I wouldn't have noticed it except for the fact that it drove me crazy. And I'm like, why? Your curiosity piece is such a great tool. Why does this bother me? Because I feel like we need to get there fast. Why do we? It's the weekend.
Yeah.
Why? Like, exactly. What is an extra 20 minutes going to mean? It's not. It isn't. It doesn't matter.
How is this going to shift our life?
Yeah. It's not. Yeah. Okay. So paths, that's the P. What's the A?
Mm-hmm. So the P, because you told that story, I'm actually going to skip to the H real quick because H is healing. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's that question of what within me needs to be healed and what within me needs to be honored. I differentiate, you know, I think words are important. I differentiate the idea of stressors versus triggers. And I use those words very differently. So when we're experiencing a stressor, we're stressed out, right? What that's a sign of is that the demands of the present experience are outweighing or overpowering our ability to cope with the present moment, right?
So
our present experience is overwhelming our ability to cope with the present moment. So that's a stressor. A trigger is my past experiences are impacting my ability to cope with the present moment. So a stressor
I have never heard somebody make that distinction before. And that is so important for people to understand. Sorry, yes. Keep going. This is so good.
No, it's so true. Because I have to break everything down. Like I studied neuropsychology at the Medical College of Georgia. So I know all the big words. And then I spent the rest of my career being like, how can I make this really easy?
You're like, that was terrible. Let's not do that to people.
Took you like an hour lecture to describe this one thing that could have been described in 30 seconds. Yeah. Not okay. Yes. So when your description with your husband was so good because it's one of those things where it's like, that was a trigger. It sounds like, right? Like your past experiences of everything has to be efficient. Go, 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 go. We got to move like that story that was implanted in you growing up was impacting your ability to cope with his, what seemed like a turtle pace of movement, you know? And sometimes it's just stressors, right? Like, so I say triggers need to be honored. I mean, healed, excuse me. We got to heal our triggers. Stressors need to be honored. Like sometimes it's like, I just didn't get enough sleep. I'm hungry. Right. Yeah. You know, not everything is something from your past that has to be, you know, we have to do EMDR on every single little frustration. Yeah. Right. So it's one of those things where it's like, and what's funny is what you do to deal with stressors versus triggers are actually very similar. But the important piece of understanding the differentiation of it is to figure out okay, with stressors, I can shift things in my environment and the stressor will shift, right? Yeah. So if you're not sure, is this a stressor or a trigger? Try changing some things, right? And if you're active, if you're less activated, then it's probably a stressor. If I don't care if Jesus, Buddha, and the Dalai Lama came down and completely shifted your and Marie Kondo'd your life, right? When that thing happens, you are activated and set off. It's probably a trigger, right? So really getting clear on like, okay, maybe I need to do some deeper work and do a little bit of digging under the ground. This isn't just about pulling out a weed. I got to like dig under the earth, get to the root and pull that out, right? So that's where it comes important. So healing, the H is really, really healing and honoring.
Yeah.
Something else that also needs to be attended to when we're talking about transforming our relationships or shifting how we show up in the world. So I skipped ahead.
That's okay. It was perfect. It was so good.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then let's rewind and go back.
Yes. So the A stands for awareness. And this is awareness around our body sensations, our emotions, and how other people respond to us.
Ooh. Right.
So it was interesting. I was in this group for a certain software thing that I had bought. And there was a whole bunch of us in a Facebook group. And the group leader just got like really triggered. And every single time somebody criticized or gave a idea that about changing the product in some way, he was like, this person's toxic. And like, you know, just everybody became toxic. Right. And it was like, okay. And this is what I mean by the being aware of how other people respond to you. If you have a group with 500 people and 350 of them are telling you the same thing.
Yes.
Maybe that's a sign
that
something about you may need to shift a little bit, right? So that's why it's important to look at how are other people responding to me, especially our children. Our children are such, they're so powerful in terms of helping us to see, if we're aware of helping us to see what's going on in the moment, right?
So
if every time you walk in a room, your child leaves or eyes go down, or maybe they jump up and run to you or tell you 15 stories, right? Like that's giving you information. So looking at how other people are responding or reacting to you is really key. The emotions and body sensations, it's interesting. This is the one that I find the people that I work with struggle with the most. Because a lot of the people I work
undoubtedly.
With,
undoubtedly,
right? Yeah. Couples, especially parents, like we were raised, I call us revolutionaries, relationship evolutionaries. We want to shift how relationships are done. We often want to do relationships differently than what was done with us. And in my environment growing up, emotions were a liability, you know, like that stop crying before I give you something to cry about, you know, whole thing. And I want to say a little caveat here. My family's awesome, right? Like a lot of people are hesitant to talk about their family dramas and traumas out of fear of somehow reverse shaming their family. And my thing is, the only way to really shift the consciousness really of the planet, but especially your family, is to acknowledge what's there, right? And it's not about reverse shaming. It's just about acknowledging. So growing up for me, it was, you know, emotions are not good. They're bad. It wasn't until I got into training and my supervisors were like, you got to do something about this. Because every time your client brings up a difficult emotion, you run out and grab some tissue or you change the subject, right? Like, it's like, you need to deal with your issues with emotions, you know? So this is often a really hard one, but because what I had to learn and what I often teach is emotions aren't good, bad, or indifferent. They're like, they're just signposts. They're like that yield sign or that stop sign. Like you might not like the fact that you have to stop, but you don't get out and shoot the stop sign, right? It's just information.
Yeah.
So realizing like this sadness is giving me information. This shame or this anxiety is giving me information. And what that asks us to do is to sort of lean in and sit with it and ask, what is this telling me? Which can feel scary at times. Same with our body sensations. Like I was like dead down from the neck below. Like, I was great in my head. The body, like, that's not something I really need to really connect with right now, right? But your body is such a powerful voice, you know, gives you such good information about what's safe, what's not safe, you know, when we're activated, when we're not. And when we don't have an awareness, or we don't take into account our emotions and body sensations and read them as the signposts they are, that's when we find ourselves responding or reacting to a laser beam situation with an atom bomb.
Yeah.
Right. And that's when we find ourselves going, oh, crap, did I just yell again? Right. More than likely, there were emotional and physical signs that were going to let you know that we're letting you know I'm getting to this point.
Yes.
But we just ran through all the stop signs. You
know? That's so good. I mean, man, if you could even get people to those first two steps, you know, taking perspective and being aware, that I find just reduces that blame and shame that we're talking about, and almost gives it like takes the edge off of the work that you're doing. It's like 5% relief just from the sake of, okay, there's an explanation here. I feel like I have my hands around this. I'm still a mess. I still have things I need to work on, but I at least understand it a little bit better. And that is such a great first step. Yeah. To give you the space you need to actually, you know, do some of the work.
Right. There's a path that you can follow.
Right? I see what you did there. I love it.
Right. Right. And one thing I forgot to mention about perspective, key question that I always have especially my couples ask, it will kind of slow down the moment, is what's the story in my head right now? Mm. Right. And literally I will tell my couples, here's a really good thing that you can do with your partner, like set a time where it's like, okay, for the next 3 hours, we're just going to talk about the stories in our head. Right. Mm-hmm. And so and you start a sentence with, the story in my head is, right. And what that does is it minimizes the idea that we often hold that my story is the God's honest truth. It is the gospel and it is what is right. So saying you don't care about me is very different than saying the story in my head is you don't care about.
Totally. God, right? the way that you word that, you're exactly right. It matters.
It does. Okay. Sorry. I keep bouncing back, but I'm like, oh yeah, one more thing. Try to give as many tools and tips as I can. So the T, speaking of tools, stands for tools. And I tell people all the time, you're always using a tool. The question is never, am I using a tool in this relationship? Is the tool I'm using helpful or unhelpful? Right. Oh, so taking good. 5 deep breaths is a tool and yelling is a tool. They're both tools. You know? It's just that one often leads to the unleashing of what I like to call the four horsemen mindset, pain, blame, shame, and avoidance. Right. And the other one might lead to a bit more connection, you know? So once you get clear on your story and you start using those, you start becoming more aware of your body sensations and emotions, it's much easier to recognize the tools that you're using in your relationship. Mm-hmm. Right. So what do you tend to do when you're stressed or triggered? What do you tend to do when you're not? Right. So asking yourself, like, in my relationship with my partner or in my relationship with my child, what tools do I use when I'm interacting with them? Am I using yelling? Am I using shutting down? Am I using shame? Am I using the pain, blame, shame, or avoidance, right? Am I using one of those tools? And what are the impact of that? When you break it down to helpful and unhelpful tools, you know, our brains love dichotomy. So when you break it down to helpful and unhelpful tools, it makes things a little bit easier to shift, right? Because you can be like, all right, I blame a lot. You know, it's like, you know, like little kids, my kids will do this all the time where it's like, he hit me. Well, she blah, 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 you know, whole thing.
You're like describing my whole life right now with a 4 and a 6-year-old. Whole life.
Can we stop and take responsibility for just a moment? Oh, it drives me nuts. It's like when you're able to stop and realize I'm using this tool, then it's easier to replace that tool as opposed to saying, well, I just overreact all the time. Or I just, you know, just shut down all the time. Like, what? No. That's very general, right? That's like saying I build a house with a tool. Like, no, use a hammer, using a wrench or using, right? So when you think about like, what specific tool am I using? And the next time, what can I replace this tool with? Right. So instead of blaming, I'm going to like one of the things I suggest, and it was so funny. I've had a number of clients use this. It's hilarious. So instead of yelling when they find themselves about to yell, they'll burst out with a Disney song. It is so funny. Oh my gosh. It is hilarious. One of my clients sent me a video where she, her kid actually filmed her going, "We don't talk about Bruno. No." I didn't start.
Well, somewhere Lin-Manuel is like smiling from using his soundtrack.
Then the kid's like, "My mom has lost it." Like, that's how he's narrating the video. Was so
that's
funny.
Fantastic.
Right? And so like realizing like you could even play, like be playful about it. Like what's something we can play with? Experimentation and play are my two favorite words in the English language. Well, and curiosity. I love that one too. Experiment, play, and curiosity. Right. That's so what can you experiment with to sort of start replacing these tools so you're not trying to hammer a nail with a wrench anymore? Right. So shifting how we think about that.
That's so good. And then let's make sure we round it out. What's the S? We talked about the H being healing and then the S.
Yes. The S stands for self-empowerment. Self-empowerment is so key because what it does is it's the, once you have all of these other ducks in a row, like usually when they're not in a row or we're not aware or aligned, what ends up happening is we end up feeling hopeless, discouraged, depressed, anxious, all of these things. But once you get to that point where you start to, even if you notice one thing, you don't even notice them all. Like you said, you can change one of these. It's not like you have to walk all five paths. You can change one of them and things will change. But once you are able to change one of those, then you can start asking yourself a very valuable question, like, where is my power in this moment?
Yeah.
Right? Because we all have power. We do. But it's like, where is it in this moment? Like,
that's
people
a huge
been,
question. Yeah, that's good.
Right. And it's easy when we aren't on the paths to get to a point where it's just, well, nothing. There's no, I have no power here. Right. And then what ends up happening is you start to descend into your emotional brain. You start reacting. You start, right. Cause now you're trying to claw your way out. You're trying to grab power struggle. But when you realize, no, if you go in with the assumption, I have power here, sometimes your power is to get up and excuse yourself.
Exactly.
Walk away. Sometimes your power is in silence.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. So realizing like whenever you're feeling in that confusing, frustrating situation, stopping and being like, where is my power? What do I have the power to do right now? Right? What would be most helpful in this situation for me to do right now? And you might have to start with, okay, let me ask myself, what's the story? And maybe I can change my story. You know, maybe I can choose a different tool, right? Maybe I can, oh, my heart is racing really fast right now. Maybe I need to just take some breaths, right? Yeah. So you start to realize you have power in different areas. And instead of struggling for it or grabbing it from other people, like really starting to look for how can I assertively or assert myself into this moment or in this moment, versus aggressively empower myself to make the change I want to see or to come moment. You know?
That's really good. And what's implicit in your, in this last piece is what is within my power in this moment and what isn't, because so many times we focus all of our energy on contextual things or other people's reactions or behaviors or opinions. Maybe we can influence some of those things, but we definitely don't have power over them. We focus on circumstances. This thing happened to me, whatever. We waste a lot of energy there. But if we could do exactly what you're saying, focus on the pieces that you actually can control, your effort, your behavior, your, you know, the way you're framing it in your mind, the things you actually have control over, you get to use all that energy for the stuff that, you know, you can do something about versus focusing outside of that circle of control. And I mean, really at that point, it's very futile because there's not a whole lot you can do.
Right. Which just furthers that story of I'm powerless. Right. It's like, you're trying to like push the mountain and you're like, the mountain won't move. See, I'm powerless. I'm broken. I'm still. Well, no, that mountain being in that specific location is not in your control.
Yes.
You cannot shift that mountain. But you can pick up that pebble right there and stick it in your pocket and walk away or whatever the case may be, right?
Yeah.
Like, but you're trying to push the mountain. No, you don't have the power to do that. That's not within your control.
Yeah.
100%.
That's so good. If they're, you know, when I think about all of the people you likely work with through this process, you can imagine how painful maybe the prior experience has been, how much they desperately want to make a change. If there's something you could leave this audience with in terms of like, if somebody's really resonating with this, like, yeah, this is something that I want to experiment with, whatever. If there's something that you maybe want to leave them with in terms of how they're thinking about themselves, what might be possible, you know, what would you say to someone in the audience who's like, yep, I definitely need to make a change. This is resonating.
Yeah. You know, I think I'll start with something I said earlier. You're not broken.
Mm.
You just likely have habits that need to be.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not as hard as you think. Like, yes, it will take effort. But once you start to reframe it as this isn't a self-worth issue, this is a habit issue.
Mm.
Right. And start to realize that, then you realize, oh, I just need to start the journey. I just need to start walking the path in the direction of where I ultimately want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get there, even if you take one micro step a day, you know, and Triggered to Transform, I have these things called quests. And it stands for Quick Useful Experiments, Strength and Transformation. Because
mm-hmm.
I kind of obsessed with, what do you call these things?
acronyms,
thank you.
I love it.
Right now, it's like, rah! So it's like, but they're all about micro steps that you can take. Tiny little micro steps. So a micro step for you might be, so this whole PAVS model, if you go to healingstablemisery.com, you can download an infographic with the PAVS model on it. And then I send you follow-up emails that help you to integrate this into your daily life, like take micro steps every day. And so you, that might be your one micro step. Like, let me go in and just download this. And every day I'll open an email and I will play with the suggestion that's in the email to take one micro step to really start shifting how I'm showing up in the world and in the most sacred relationships in my life.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. I love that. This could be like a 3-hour podcast. There's so many things that I wanted to dive into and I'm like, we're not going to be able to do it. So you need to come back.
Part two.
You absolutely do. Where can people, you gave one website, but just talk to us a little bit more about where you are online, where you would suggest people start. Maybe it is with that PAVS, infographic, just so that we can connect with you if this is something that, you know, is really resonating.
Absolutely. I would say 100% go to healingstablemisery.com and start with that PAVS, process. And you'll really be able to get some insight into, how you are in your most important and most sacred relationships. All right. So absolutely start there.
I love it.
And I'll
make sure I link that up so that that link is just in the episode description on your show notes page.
Yes. Thank you. And of course I also have, you know, I see couples one-on-one and I have Triggered to Transform parent coaching program. So you can also, as you get the emails, you'll be able to check that out too. There are links in there that will guide you towards that. So you can find out more about it.
This is amazing. We did it.
We
recorded
did it.
This episode. Lynetta, this is amazing. You're just phenomenal. And I can tell the care that you've taken just in the way that you describe things from the care that you've taken to translate your incredible training and background and experience and the, again, what feels conceptual and sterile in the field into something that is truly doable for people, actionable for people. So I just commend you for that. And I'm so grateful that you were tenacious with me and we made this happen.
Thank you. And I appreciate you too. I love chatting with people who are like neuro nerds like me. So it was so much fun being able to connect with you. And I appreciate your tenacity and your deep desire to really communicate this to the world in a way that we can digest it and understand it, because it's sorely needed. It really is. So thank you for doing this.
Absolutely. Okay, friends, hang out with me for one more second. I've got a few resources to share with you, a few of them that we haven't talked about recently that I think will be really useful as you digest what we've learned from Lynetta today, and also, of course, links to all of her resources. So we'll cover all of that in just a minute. I'll be right back. All right, friends, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Dr. Lynetta Willis. I hope you see what I meant when I said how fantastic she is. She is just a light in the world and such a brilliant mind. I want to talk about three additional resources. One, Dr. Willis did not mention in her interview, but she actually has an upcoming program that she's releasing. I think it's actually free. It's called Parent with Calm and Confidence, Create Your Personal Parenting Roadmap in 5 Days. It is just an incredible resource. I've linked up Dr. Willis's website in the additional resources section of this episode. So if you swipe up on your phone, you can get directly to that, or you can click on it on the show notes page if that's where you're listening to this. This challenge is just a way for you to start to explore your own triggers and start to think about how they might be impacting the way that you parent. And that just has an incredible ripple effect, both in how we think about ourselves, that dreaded guilt feeling that we all have from time to time, and what an incredible expert to learn from. So if you go to Lynetta's website, a box will pop up on the bottom right-hand corner. You can sign up for that challenge and get in on that. That is happening soon, so do it quickly. Second, we talked about this topic because it's such a sneaky topic, right? It's one of those things where basically what's happening is when we're children, by osmosis, our mind is learning what it means to be, like how things work in our family, what people like us do and don't do. That is actually the core message that I delivered in my TEDx talk. I used kind of a funny way of talking about it. I really like space a lot, if you don't know that about me. And so the title of my TEDx talk is Mind Over Dark Matter, A Guide to Uncovering Your True Potential. And I use this idea of dark matter because in space, like 80% of the matter that's in space is dark matter, meaning we don't know what it is. We can't even really directly measure it. We have no idea what it is. The only reason why we know it's there is because we can see its impact, like its gravitational impact on other objects in space. So they're being acted on by gravity. We don't know what's causing the gravity, and that's what dark matter is. It's very similar to the way that we think about the mind, because we develop these subconscious habits or the subconscious learning over time, and it's very passive. And so we can see the impact of that learning in the way that we relate to our kids, in the way that we relate in our close relationships, all of those things. But we can't actually point our finger or put our finger on where the influence of those actions is coming from. It's like dark matter, but in our mind. So I wanted to link up my TEDx talk. That's in the additional resources as well, just in case that analogy helps you understand what we were talking about a bit more. And then finally, one more resource. It's one that I've linked up before, but it's one that I really like. It is a link to a blog post that I wrote called Emotional Intelligence: Sifting Through Gray Emotional Sludge. There's so much around when we do this work of trying to understand our own behavior, the root causes of it, this intergenerational, you know, component that we talked with Lynetta about today. It can create a lot of emotion. And not only that, it can create a lot of complex emotion where both positive and negative emotions come at once and they come on top of each other. Lots of negative emotion comes on top of each other, and it can be really hard to sort through. Emotions are easier to deal with when they come one at a time, when they are clear and understandable, and we know what the cause of them is and maybe what the target of them is. But when it's more amorphous and less difficult or less straightforward to wrap our minds around, like in these complex situations of intergenerational trauma or drama, as Dr. Willis calls it, it can be hard to sift through our own emotions. And so that blog post is a way, it's an analogy using paint to help you think about how you might start to tease apart your own emotional experience, particularly when you're in these tough situations that are pretty complex. So hopefully that helps you if this is some of the work that you are planning on doing after listening to this episode. All right, you guys, I love this episode so much. We're going to have Dr. Willis back. I told her to reach out to me in a few months so she can come back because there's so much that we didn't talk about and you guys need to hear from her again. But before that, let's remember that time is the most non-renewable resource on the planet. And I'm so grateful to each and every one of you who chose to spend some of your precious time with me today. I'm Dr. April Seifert, and I'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.